Welcome to the most amazing audio experience in the galaxy, your favorite podcast about data, tech, and general geekery. This week, everybody, is a very special week. Very, very special. Firstly, Jonathan Morgan is out of the country, gallivanting, I know, gallivanting with his European friends and probably, I don't know, drinking absinthe and hand-rolling cigarettes in some meadow somewhere in the UK.
Is that what Europeans do
That's
in your
what
mind?
I think Jonathan does in my mind. And so this means that the two of us, Chris and I, Vidya, have full and complete control over this week's show. I think we should totally go rogue. We can do whatever we want, Chris. Anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's no Jonathans around to tell us what to do. Doesn't this feel like how it felt back in high school when the substitute teacher like left the room for 15 minutes or something and we're like looking at each other like, oh my god, anything could happen right now. We could go nuts. It's kind of overwhelming.
I like it how you can't even talk about Jonathan as like the teacher. He has to be like the substitute teacher, you know? It's like when the mall cop comes.
Yeah, not even a real cop hat. Yeah, well, as always, we will start off the show with drinking. Dr. Christopher Albin, what is your bevy of choice today?
I am drinking a Santan Hopscotch IPA from somewhere in Arizona.
Nice.
I believe. I think I was drinking this last time. I still have more of it in my fridge, thus we're continuing to drink the same thing.
Awesome.
Eventually, I will go and find something new. But this is really good, so I'm just taking it.
Yeah, well, I just discovered some beer in my fridge. I can't say how old it is, but is there such a thing as beer going bad? I don't know. I haven't just opened this yet. It's Hop Valley Alphadelic IPA. And I guess, like, IPAs have been on ships, right? Like, that's why they're called IPAs, because they went from India to some other place, and that's why they're called the IPA. So I guess like it probably just makes it better if it just sits around, kind of like wine.
That's true. That is exactly true with the IPA. It's made for long distance travel in like 1890, so I don't know if that still applies now.
Yeah, that's equivalent to just leaving beer in my fridge for like months and forgetting about it.
And now a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by data.world, the social network for data people. Discover and share cool data, connect with interesting people, and work together to solve problems faster at data.world. Whether you're already a frequent database contributor or totally new to data.world, there are several resources you can use to stay in the loop on latest features, learn new skills, and get support. Check out docs.data.world for up-to-date API documentation tutorials on SQL and other query techniques, and much more. So go check it out at data.world. So this week we're going to do something a little different, and I think a little special.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually going to be talking about something that is or has been a part of any data scientist's life or anyone who ever works in data science, but, you know, it's typically not talked about. That is imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, so when we first started talking about how we wanted to talk about imposter syndrome, you know, we wanted to do it in a way that would kind of be more meaningful and make more sense than like a listicle of the top 10 tips of imposter syndrome or something like that. Because,
yeah,
like, one, I don't know what those tips would be. And two, like, you know, that would just be like this horrible, horrible clickbait. So instead, we are going to spend a good chunk of this episode actually exploring imposter syndrome in the world of data science from two perspectives, our own.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing. I am super excited. Let's dive right in with me.
Go for it.
Okay. So I'm going first here.
Okay, go first.
Before anything else, I think, you know, in order to understand like the rest of, you know, like the rest of what imposter syndrome is to me, you have to understand how I came into data science. And a little teaser, we're actually going to do a segment in future episodes of how each of us got into data science in more detail. But that is for another time. I'm just teasing. All right. My formal training is not in computer science or something like that. It's in quantitative political science. That is my PhD. That's what I spent a decade doing. Like that is sort of my home turf. And that means certain things. It means dense data, observational studies, you know, frequentist statistical analyses, that kind of stuff, like classic researcher skills. And when I first made the transition from research into data science, it kind of felt like walking into a big party, because suddenly there was all these people who spent their entire careers and their entire education focusing on techniques and topics that, like, I really only had, like, a surface understanding of. Like, things like neural networks or interactive visualizations. Like, that doesn't come up that much when you're writing journal articles. Like, there's nothing to be interactive in your black and white journal publication. And it was so amazing. So amazing. Because it was so clear right from the start that you were never going to master data science. Like, you were never going to be at the point where you're like, guys, I'm done. You know, like,
right.
I know exactly how everything works. Because there was way too much to learn. And that was, frankly, what made me attractive to the field. Because, my first time in tech was in web design. And I, like, after a few years, I kind of felt like I was kind of done with it. Like, I'd really done a lot with it. Now, web design has, like, exploded into things. But, like, back in the day when I was doing it, like, I really felt like I'd sort of mastered that topic. And I wanted something that was broad. And that was data science. Super cool. However, you know, sometimes, especially in the early years when I was sort of like first transitioning, it was kind of a bit terrifying at times because, you know, over and over again, you would run into someone who had the same title as you, data scientist, and they'd know all these things that you didn't know, right?
Yeah.
And you would think to yourself, holy fuck, like, I am a fraud.
Yeah.
Like, that dude is the real data scientist. Like, I am just posing.
Yeah, and I totally can relate and understand. I wonder if this is... Can you remember that last episode we talked about how you walk into situations and you think everybody is around you is way better than you? Like, you go to the gym and there's all these people that are, like, way more fit and way have their gym shit together. And you're, like, kind of a slob. And that's really because these people are out there doing that so much and all the time, and so that's why they're there. And you know, you just show up once in a while. I wonder if there's anything related to that within the field of data scientists, where, like, there's, it's so broad that that one topic that you think, you know, this person is an expert in, you know, it somehow corresponds to, like, knowing all of data, like becoming a master of all of data science. But really what it is is that one particular technique or that one particular, you know, methodology is what they're an expert in. And so then you just kind of feel insecure about that. Do you think that there's a connection there in that same, like, psychological phenomenon that happens?
Oh, no, I totally think. Like, I think there's two psychological phenomena that happen, really, obviously. Like, one is that, because, of course, you're going to run into people who know different topics than you. So, like, you're constantly running into people who know, quote unquote, more than you. And then the other one is, there's a name for this. I don't know it because I'm not going to Google it right now. But it's where you know, the more you know about the topic, or when you start to know more about the topic, you feel like you realize how much you don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, when you're totally ignorant of a topic, you're like, man, I am amazing. And then, like, when you, like, know a lot about a topic, you're like, I don't know anything. What's happening?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I think that's, like, you know, I think that's totally, like, the major parts of it. Because, you know, now that I've been in the field for a good number of years, you know, over time, I've actually had to meet and, frankly, become good friends with, like, a great number of data scientists, including a bunch of people listening to this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I will let you know the greatest secret that this field has, that after you get to know them and after, you know, you've had a few beers and, like, you've sort of talked to them, like, in depth, and then everyone becomes comfortable, you realize that every single one has felt like an imposter or currently feels like an imposter. Every single
totally.
One. There's no person who have sat down and be like, oh, dude, I got this.
Oh,
like, I'm, you know, like, they could be comfortable with their, you know, what their field, like, what they're doing in their particular subset. But, like, they're not like, I'm, you know, going to design a self-driving car and then do a New York Times style interactive visualization. And then, you know, like.
Yeah.
No person like that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of relieving when you're sitting down with these people that you're kind of put up on a pedestal sometimes. And you're like, oh my God, I'm like hanging out with this one person that I have like a geek crush on. And then they're like kind of insecure about something that you're like not really that tripping about. So it's really relieving and it kind of makes you just relate to each other. I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that was sort of the closest thing to a cure to imposter syndrome that, like, I could experience, because, you know, it means that everyone in the field is sort of like in the exact same place. You know, like when they say, like, well, the, you know, in the forest, if you meet a bear, the bear is just as scared as you are of the bear. It's like that, but imposter syndrome, right? They meet you, they're like, man, that guy knows so much stuff about statistics. And I look at them and I'm like, well, that guy's like a neural network god.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think it's important to sort of keep that in your mind, because, you know, while I think that imposter syndrome is prevalent in many fields, like it was prevalent in political science, totally, like, I think it's definitely strong in political science for, like, one big reason, that data science is a huge, huge discipline. And because it's a newer discipline, people come to it from diverse backgrounds, right? That, like, everyone didn't come from a data science, like, master's program or whatever. Like, I know they're coming up now, but, like, every single people who are sort of part of my peer group in data science comes from, like, totally, totally, like, disparate backgrounds. Like, either they didn't graduate college, or they have a PhD in statistics, or they're a math nerd, or, like, whatever. And, you know, what this means is that, like, when you're sort of someone like me who's a researcher in the same field as someone who's, you know, a computer scientist who's studied algorithms for 5 years or something, or a developer who's really sort of stumbled into being really good with data analysis pipelines, or a mathematician who fell in love with machine learning and that kind of stuff, like, you're going to run into all these people who are in the same field as you. They probably have the exact same title as you, and they totally know different things than you. And, you know, when this is the case, you're going to sort of have an issue where you run into all these people and it seems like they know way more than you, right? And that, and, like, you look at them and you go, wow, like, that person must be so much better than me. That person must know way more than I know. But, like, the problem is that it's that not that they know more than you, it's that they know different things than you, right? And, like, once you sort of become comfortable with what you know and what your area of expertise is, then you can sort of say, like, well, you know, like, I'm okay not being an expert in neural networks, and I would love to learn it. I'd love to go down there, but, like, I'm okay not to be the expert right now. I will be the expert later on.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I'm comfortable with, like, my background. That's sort of the cure to sort of getting past it and sort of really starting to enjoy it, because, you know, the issue for me about imposter syndrome is that it really, really, really sucks, because what I, you know, enjoyed about data science from the start was, and the thing that sort of drew me to data science in the first place, was that it was effectively multiple lifetimes worth of things to learn from all these diverse people. And, like, that's really the best thing about data science, not the worst thing about data science.
Yeah, I think you hit up on a really, really good point. It's not that, you know, other people know more than you. It's that the field is so massively huge and so widely varied, and also just developing really quickly in, like, so many new directions that it's hard to keep up on. And that the overall landscape of what there is to know to be, like, you know, a master, quote, of data science is so humongous that, like, that's really why you feel, you know, insecure. It's not that the other person knows more than you. It's just that you're right. They just know this different tiny little slice of this massive thing that we're all trying to understand, like, together.
Yeah. No, I think that's completely true.
Yeah, man. I'm really super glad to be openly talking about this. I never really talk about this with other folks, because there's this sense of, you know, like, you're legit, you're accomplished, you've got shit going on. You're not going to admit to any feelings of insecurity or, like, feeling like you're a fake or something. You know, nobody wants to admit that. And, you know, I actually dug up the official definition of imposter syndrome. I don't know how official this is. It's on Wikipedia, so official enough.
That's good.
That works, right? Yeah. Yep. This is what it says. It says, high-achieving individuals marked by an inability to internalize their accomplishments and a persistent fear of being exposed as a fraud. So, like, the interesting part about that is that they're high-achieving individuals. I mean, right? Like, the real talk is that I would say myself, along with 100% of my friends and colleagues in the world of data and data science, have totally admitted to having this feeling at some point or other in their careers. So it's every single person. Now, this isn't really the same as, like, the lack of confidence I felt, you know, at the early stage of my careers. It's a feeling that comes after you actually start being seen as a professional or even an expert in your field. So as you start doing things, and as you start accomplishing things and achieving things, even after you get the titles, even after you dive into and successfully complete super technical predictive modeling projects, or even after you're introduced to someone else as a, you know, expert data scientist, it feels like we're duping the world into thinking someone we're not. And that's that's craziness, right? There's something kind of, like, actually irrational about it. And for me, my earliest work, like, as, you know, as a person working in the world, was pretty deep in data science and in computer science. I was a computer science undergrad and worked on projects at the San Diego Supercomputer Center, kind of like in the early 2000s. Most of my work was to help, like, benchmark a new type of parallel computer made up of networked supercomputers around the world. So if you can imagine it, it's like an Uber virtual supercomputer. And I had to like, yes, yeah, I know, it's ridiculous. I had to, like, do predictive modeling to measure a performance of this virtual supercomputer made up of physical supercomputers that wasn't even built yet. Like, it was a very deeply technical, super data-heavy, analytics-heavy work, and totally would be considered data science-y. Except that word wasn't really used back then. And for me, this was like way more than a decade ago. And while today I work in the field of super highly technical data science and analytics, most of my work is non-technical. I mean, basically by non-technical, what I mean is I don't code anymore. And for some reason in my head, coding and being an engineer and doing computer science related to data is like some weird definition of what a scientist does. And so if I don't write code or really like work as an implementer of the latest modeling algorithms anymore, do I still count as a data scientist?
Yeah.
Like, does that... I mean,
that's such a good point because, you know, for me, like, I've always thought of like DJ Patil, the, you know, chief data scientist of the US, like that guy's a data scientist.
Right.
That guy's absolutely a data scientist. There's no way DJ codes a single line, right? Because of like, that's not his role. His role is not like his value is not in the fact that he's like, it would be a waste of everyone's time if the chief data scientist of the US was sitting in his office, like plugging away in pandas or something like that. No, like that's not his role. His role is to like organize and like get people moving and the, you know, like build these infrastructures that can kind of run on their own. That's his role. But like, of course he's a data scientist. Like there's no doubt. Anyone has the cred, it's him.
I actually read somewhere, I think one of his earlier works was actually helping to coin the phrase data science. So like this, I think that was interesting work on its own, that, you know, there is a science and even an art around this, the work that we're all doing. But there's this leap that goes from data science to data scientist, which I think throws a lot of people off because they don't feel like scientists, you know? And I think that's part of the reason for why we feel like we're fakes, because we're like, I don't really feel like a scientist. I totally do work with data and try to, you know, bring meaningful, valuable insights out of it. And so, like, for me, most of my career really has been about using the power of data to solve meaningful problems around me. And over the years, I found myself just more and more drawn to the use cases and to the people who needed the solutions, and less drawn to the programming side of the work. And so that's what I mainly do, like work with really phenomenal data scientists like you and Jonathan, and like help bridge the technology into the world and into the solution, and to speak both sides of the table and like be able to communicate with business and subject matter experts about data and about data science and to the software architects and data analysts. Like, so does that mean I still count as a data scientist because this is what my work is? You know, and for me, like, it's just kind of this question that I've had and struggled with for years, really. And like the way that I overcame it was really weird. It just like happened in a literal an instant. 4 years ago, it was like years ago when I was on stage and talking about this type of work of bridging, you know, the worlds of data science and business to an audience of thousands of IT and data science professionals. And I was talking about the work that I was doing with companies like IBM and Ernst & Young to help them gain value from open government data. And it's like such a technically like, okay, that's not a normal, regular talk. And I realized that it was kind of stupid and ridiculous to believe that I was an imposter when I'm giving speeches like that. So I just kind of got over it. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. I mean, to me, at the end of the day, the phrase data science is pretty new. It definitely didn't exist 15 years ago. So all those people, including me, that were doing this kind of work before the phrase existed, now feel this like need to rebrand ourselves with this title so that it feels like, oh yeah, like justifying or something. So I kind of think it's just really a you know, an issue of branding and branding ourselves. So go do your work, use the data in any way you want. People will call you a data scientist or not. You will call yourself a data scientist or not. And there'll be some other hot title to describe this exact work in the next 15 years, and we'll all probably feel like imposters again.
I know, there'll be like the chief algorithms officer.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that title exists now, but like, you know, algorithm scientist.
Right, like
AI.
Yeah, totally. Like machine, no, it wouldn't be machine wizard. That's too geeky. That doesn't make any sense.
I want a new title. It's machine wizard.
Yeah.
Yep. I know. I mean, that's like, such a you know, like a major point, because like the same thing with me, where when I joined data science, there wasn't really like a data science, like, and for a while I called myself like a data analyst, because like I do data analyst, like that's what I did, like I analyze data. and then like people didn't really know what that was. And then so like then when data science started to become a thing, like I sort of identified with that field and I moved into that and I called myself a data scientist and like that's what I am. Like that's the correct title for me based on like what other people would think that I do, right?
Yeah.
And it's helpful because I don't need to provide like six paragraphs of like
right.
what my background is for them to understand. But it's also, you know, I think unhelpful in the way that, you know, like I believe that, you know, in the future, I think that the title of data scientist will actually start to go away and it'll actually diversify. So like you'll be something who is like machine learning expert and someone else who's like data pipeline-ist.
Yeah.
Or whatever. These are horrible
thoughts. I would but like
and
that.
And I think that I totally think that's the way because, you know, when I first started getting into tech, it was in web design and everyone was a web designer. And that was because a company would hire one web designer to do everything.
Totally.
And now everyone has a really complicated, like web design is 100 times more complicated, which means you need specialization. Like someone's a front end dev, someone's a designer, someone's a UX expert, like all these kind of things. And that means that you need a title to describe those. And I think we're just starting to get there with data science, right? We're how I describe myself now, where I call myself a data scientist and some person who's designing a self-driving car is calling themselves a data scientist.
Right.
Like we're all in data science. But I think eventually we'll start to have different titles as things sort of just to help us figure out who's who.
I think that would be super helpful. I mean, even now when we meet data scientists, even at like our meetups or whatever, I always have to have like a bunch of follow-up questions to really get a sense of like what part of the overall workflow they're working on and what part of the broader kind of industry are they working in. And so I think it's totally accurate and right. And that might actually help kind of curb the imposter syndrome vibe because data scientist is like so massive sounding. You know, it's like the scientist of data. It's very huge. And so I think that like that specialization will really be helpful. And all those folks who've like made it their, you know, like branding strategy to be like known as a data scientist will have to somehow, you know, clarify what that means in the future, which is good, I think.
And now a word from our second sponsor, Vera. Think about this. More data has been created in the past 2 years than in the entire previous history of the human race. And by the year 2020, about 1.7 megabytes of new information will be created every second for every human on the planet. How can all this data transcend hard drives to become information we need to grow businesses, understand our society, and solve our problems? All that data blending, cleaning, and transformation will need a superhuman effort before anyone ever sees actionable insights or visualizations. Whoa. But with the powers of Vera, there's hope. Go to getvera.com and discover how you could become a data superhero. Combine data from multiple places and different formats, clean, dedupe, and transform for analysis, easily schedule repeatable processes to prepare and deliver the information. The world needs more data superheroes, and Vera is the place to go. Go to getvera.com and check it out. And that is the episode for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you learned something new about us and maybe about yourself. If you want to check us out on iTunes and maybe leave us a review, that is awesome. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at @PartiallyD. My name is Chris Albin. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Albin. You can follow Vidya on Twitter at @Vid_Spandana. Have a great week, all.